Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If poisoning your wife is the darkest act of control, what do you call it when you try to rewrite her death from a jail cell? This episode takes us into what may be the most disturbing chapter of the James Craig case, not the poisoning itself, but what allegedly happened after. Because according to prosecutors, once Angela Craig was dead, James didn't just go quiet. He allegedly went to work again. This time not with cyanide, but with a letter. A letter to his teenage daughter. Inside it, instructions. Not grief, not regret, but a plan. To create a fake video of Angela confessing to her own suicide. A deep fake. Full on. Scripted, falsified, digital manipulation designed to rewrite the ending of a story he allegedly authored. I mean, think about that. Your wife is dead. You're behind bars. And your next move is to enlist your child to help fake your mother's suicide. It's not just unethical, it's psychologically nuclear. I mean, it really is. With me today is psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, and we're unpacking what this says about the kind of mind behind it. What kind of person doesn't just harm his spouse, but then tries to conscript their own child into cleaning it up? What happens inside a family system where this request doesn't get met with immediate horror, but with quiet consideration? This episode is about grooming, not in the way you normally hear the term, but in emotional sense, long-term manipulation that makes the unthinkable feel like just about being another favor. We'll talk about how love, guilt, fear, and obligation get twisted, how someone can erode boundaries over years until asking your daughter to fake a death video doesn't feel like a red line, just another request from dad. While you're at it, sweep out the garage. We'll also talk about what Angela's final months may have looked like through this lens. The gaslighting, the subtle erosion, the emotional silencing. Because when you see what Craig allegedly tried to do after her death, it forces you to rethink everything that led up to it. We'll talk about the damage that didn't stop with the crime and the control that kept trying to reach from behind bars. What do you think was going on in that household leading up to this? And this is kind of the question of others out there that may be watching this going, I have somebody in my life that kind of has some of these traits, not necessarily down to the, you know, exact words of they're a dentist practicing in Colorado buying arsenic, but someone with these sort of signs. What do you think life was like in the home, if we're assuming this guy was a narcissist, leading up to the poisoning, leading up to that actually taking place for his wife, Angela, before the arsenic started making it into the smoothies?
I would guess that he was role-playing the part of a loving husband. And, you know, some of the texts that we've seen between the two of them were very lovey-dovey. And this could have all been very much part of his cover up for what he was really doing on the side with other women, was piling on praise to her, doing these superficial things, making smoothies for her every morning. And you know, it was all part of this ruse that he had going. And it certainly sounds like it worked.
Yeah, you know, it certainly does seem like it did. Do you think Angela could have sensed the danger as things had started to ramp in that direction? Or when you're with someone for that long, I'm going to guess craziness, crazy behavior that would be evident to others may not be so crazy because it's been normalized for so long.
Right, right. Yeah. The frog in the hot water, mm-hmm. She got used to certain things being a bit off and probably did not see it. And, you know, it's just a tragedy that she was bamboozled and ended up dead by this guy.
Mm-hmm. Would you call it denial when you're in a relationship like that? Or what is that? Is it just, you're just missing it just because the water got hot and you were in it? Mm-hmm. I mean, because sometimes you can look at things retrospectively if you survive, mm-hmm. and it's easier then to go, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the signs, you know, were kind of there, and you can kind of look yourself go, yeah, maybe I was just kind of denying that.
People have amazing abilities to not see what's right in front of them sometimes. And denial is a good word for it. But sometimes there just aren't signs. And so it's not as much denial as you were just with a really sharp con man who was doing all sorts of things to trick you.
You know, it's one of those things where unless you've been through it and you understand what life is like with someone like that, it's hard to relate and it's hard to, you know, to give advice that's going to be meaningful or effective. But I would imagine if there had been any bumps in the road and if she was talking to people, this is all just pure speculation. You'd have friends and family. Oh, well, maybe, you know, some counseling, maybe, you know, a little marriage right. Counseling together is going to fix it. Give it a chance. You've been together for so long. You got all these kids. You don't want to blow up. There's all those things and finances. I mean, it's all wound up into this big, tight ball of hell that you really can't escape from in any sort of easy way. I would imagine that those sort of things also would keep someone in a place longer than they otherwise, you know, would be had there not been all those factors there. I would take it this is probably someone that even if they sat down with the best couples therapist, you're never going to get anywhere with. What would it have been like had Angela and Mr. Killer Dentist here, James Craig, ended up in a couples therapist office?
He would have done his very best to bamboozle the therapist. And oh my gosh, I have seen that happen. And I've seen it work. Because as I always say, therapists aren't lie detectors. I often thought I'd love to have a lie detector in my office because mm-hmm. there were sure some people I would have liked to hook up to it, you know. But yeah, for a person like this to ever benefit from therapy, I doubt it. I don't see how, because there's no honesty there. He's not honest with anyone. He's not honest with himself. And the only people who benefit from therapy are people who come in and want to look at, you know, at their own shit. They want to understand themselves. They want to do better. They want to change. And that's not a person like this. If anything, when they go to therapy, they go in to be self-aggrandizing, to charm the therapist, and to play victim about how other people are being so unfair to them for trying to assign consequences when they behave badly.
And that's the thing. I mean, obviously, we're big proponents of therapy here on the program. It's kind of what you do. And yeah. It's obviously it's great when the right person gets it because they want it and they need it. But it can all can it make basically the symptoms of narcissism, can it exacerbate the symptoms for the right person? Because it's actually doing the opposite. It's feeding, it's giving right. gasoline to something that's already on fire.
It's a really good point because therapists come into this work, if you're a good therapist, because you really care about people and you want to be affirming to people. And most people come in with a lot of self-criticism, depression, anxiety, they're struggling, they're suffering. And so therapists tend to have a manner that's very soothing and very comforting. And if they don't catch that they're dealing with a narcissist, they may be just feeding their ego and actually amplifying the problem rather than taking it in a direction where they're going to be confronting some of this manipulative behavior. So I think particularly with young therapists or overly nurturing therapists who aren't seeing the whole picture and aren't getting collateral information, they're not helping. And therapy then just turns into a session of someone coming in and complaining about how other people are unfair to them and how wonderful they are. And the therapist may validate that. I've sure had people try to do that with me. And they're not people I enjoy working with because you don't make any progress. And the other relevant piece with this is that there is such an emphasis in many faith groups, including the Mormon Church, with holding the family together and saving every marriage. And, you know, if you just have faith and follow the rules and do everything right, this marriage can be saved. And that's a myth. There are a lot of marriages, relationships that should not be saved. And that's another reason I am very reticent at this point in my career to do lots and lots of couples therapy, because I think I've gotten pretty good at spotting personality disorders. And when a couple comes in and they really are saying, we want to save this marriage, but I identify one with a pretty severe personality disorder, that's not really my goal. That's not what I see as being a healthy thing. And so I've had to come up with my way of maneuvering in that situation. So I don't feel like I'm just validating something that's really pretty twisted.
And that's a big thing. I mean, if you have one, especially both, in a relationship with a personality disorder, a severe one like this, that person shouldn't be in any relationship. Ain't nobody that's going to mesh with in any sort of healthy level. That person needs to get good on their own, but unfortunately they never see it as a problem, so they never do. If murder was the crime, this was the encore. What James Craig allegedly tried to do after Angela's death, scripting a deepfake video, asking his daughter to fake her mother's voice and suicide confession, that's not panic. It's not a moment of breakdown. That's a continuation of control, manipulation, of the exact same pattern prosecutors say he played out during the murder itself. Rewrite reality, dominate perception, erase resistance. At least that's what went through his mind, and he said, great idea. As Siobhan laid out, this isn't just about breaking the law, it's about breaking people. It's about how emotional abuse often doesn't look like screaming or violence. Sometimes it looks like a soft voice, a long hug, and a quiet ask that crosses a boundary you didn't even realize had been worn down over time. And that's what makes this part of the story so brutal. Not the technical horror of the deepfake video, but the emotional horror of a family system where that request was even possible. What does it do to a child when the person they've trusted loved turns out to be this dangerous, not just to their mother, but to their own sense of reality? And if you're Angela, how many quiet moments, how many arguments, glances, moments of silence make more sense now that we know what came next? The murder may have ended her life, but it didn't end his control. Craig allegedly tried to keep snapping the narrative from behind bars. And that tells us everything we need to know about how little remorse was present and how much ego still was. But here's a relief this. With a reminder that emotional violence doesn't stop at the crime, it echoes through children, through systems, through silence. Next time we talk to Siobhan, we're going to step back, look at the whole picture, who James Craig really is, or might be, beneath the charm, the credentials, the calm. We'll talk diagnosis, risk, what the public should understand about predators who hide in plain sight. Let me finish with this. Let me know when you're... ready to talk about this. Because it's a conversation that needs to be had. Have you had someone in your life, Maybe not going to this extreme, but like this. Share that experience in the comment section. You've been manipulated. You didn't see it right at first, but if you're able to write, obviously it wasn't too late. You were able to see the other side of it. Sometimes sharing our own personal experiences is what's going to help others out there like Angela before it's too late to see that they're not alone, that these people exist. Sharing your stories, and don't name names, but sharing your stories. And all of us putting it out there in the open of, yeah, this could happen to anybody, because it does happen to people all the time. Smart people who get sucked in and don't see the way out and never get out. If you have a story, tell us in the comments section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You'll find us there. Or search that exact same title, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our episodes and the cases we follow for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.